All right, guys, I want to, if there's anything I want to see happen today, I want to make sure that we watch the progression of what Paul's doing. In the book of Galatians, as we looked at last week, he's a little bit upset. These churches had received the gospel, they had believed the gospel, and now they were adding works to the gospel. Now, understand, and I don't want to have to say this, but maybe twice. This context is on becoming a Christian. This context is not quite to being a Christian. I don't know if you know the difference between. He's talking about how were you converted? How did you become a believer? Imagine being in their situation, and someone comes to you and say, "Oh, I hear that you've become a Christian." And you're like, "Well, yes, I have." And they say, "Well, have you been circumcised?" What have they just said to you? To become a Christian, you have to be circumcised. So this whole context in this early part of this book is about us becoming Christians or believers or approved by God through believing in Jesus and nothing else. It's like, all of us were saved I was talking about this last week with a gentleman in here. We were all saved like the thief on the cross. We didn't add anything to our salvation. We believed and that was that. Okay? And you got to remember, that's a real argument. That he was with Jesus in paradise through trust. He did not get a chance to go through all of the rituals that we put on people to become a believer, right? And we've all seen or known, or maybe I've been involved in deathbed conversions where you've got someone who they've got minutes left in your life and you're with them sharing the gospel and they believe, and they're going to end up in the same place that any of you seasoned Christians are. That's the context. So Paul's a little upset because he's going, how are you guys going back under that? You know how this works. It's by grace through faith. And now you're wanting to add all of these other things to it. So here's where he drops. It's almost like a trick. I don't know. It's almost like a mystery. It's like a riddle or a puzzle, he says. And it may not feel that way, but if you keep watching, and it is. He says at the very, very verse 10, am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? He said, am I trying to please man? If I were still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ. And he nails that pretty clearly. God has freed us from needing man's approval because of what Christ has done for us. And we, each day in our faith, we should be asking God to set us free from doing what we do for the applause or for the approval of other people. And y'all, it's very difficult to live your life that way. It's difficult to live your life needing other people's approval, and it's very difficult to make the break. Because the things that we do, if we're honest, if we really look at them, we're probably doing it sometimes because of what other people have said or what we know other people might think. We all struggle with this. I don't even have to have that conversation with you because we're all kind of came into this world that way. But the second thing that Paul says is this, am I seeking God's approval? So let that one sit on you for just a second, and let me read you a little bit of his testimony. This is Paul giving his testimony, okay? And by the way, if you really want to understand Paul's testimony, you could write this down. Read Acts chapter 9, Acts chapter 22, and Acts chapter 26. Acts chapter 9 is when he's converted. Acts chapter 22 and Acts chapter 26 is when he's standing before councils giving his testimony. And you take Acts chapter 9, Acts chapter 22, and Acts chapter 26 all together, you have an amazing story of his conversion. Anyway, he says, remember, his question is, am I seeking man's approval or God's approval? Now, if I were to ask you, which is the right one to go after, a good religious person would have to say, well, you're better off going after God's approval than you are going after man's approval. Here's what Paul says. He said, I would have you know, brothers. Listen how many times he says the gospel. I'm gonna insert the word gospel even in the pronouns, okay? He says, I would have you know, brothers, that the gospel that was preached by me is not man's gospel. For I did not receive the gospel from any man, nor was I taught the gospel, but I received the gospel through a revelation of Jesus Christ. So he wants you to know that his conversion came through Christ revealing himself to him. Okay? That's how he was converted. We know that. We know that story. He was on the Damascus Road. Saul, which was his name at that point, was headed down the Damascus Road to Damascus in order to kill Christians, and God was coming in the other direction in order to convert Saul. Okay? So Saul had one plan, God had another plan. It's probably true of all of our testimonies if we really look at the story closely, if we really backtrack it closely. But then he goes on and he says this, for you have heard of my former life in Judaism, how I persecuted the church of God. I violently tried to destroy it. I was advancing in Judaism beyond many of my own age, among my own people. I was so zealous for the traditions of my fathers. What is Saul trying to do? As he is morally superior, as he is religiously superior, as he has a greater passion than any other person around him, whose approval is he trying to get? He's trying to get God's approval. He is setting himself up as a Jew of Jews, the best of the best. He is going to earn God's approval come hell or high water. His testimony is amazing. If you were to look at his track record, you'd go, man, God must be taking notice of this guy if you were a Jew. You're watching him. He's risen above a passive Judaism. He is going after it with all that he has. He is seeking to earn God's approval through performance. He's laid it down and directly attached it to the last statement that he made. He said, am I seeking man's approval or God's approval? Everybody's going, well, you can't seek man's approval. That's a dead-end street. Paul says, well, you should listen to my story and look what it looks like to go after God's approval. Can you imagine how exhausting it would be if you spent your life trying to get God to take notice of you? And how many people do that? When you hear the testimony often of a religious person who is not necessarily a believer and ask them if they believe that they are right with God, they will begin to talk about their works. Well, I've been married for 40 years, and I've tried to go to church every week, and I try to be honest with people, and I try to give. Do you know people like this? Whose approval are they trying to earn? They're trying to get God's approval. They're the ones, probably, that one day will stand before God. And they will say, didn't I do this, and didn't I do this, and didn't I do this? They were trying to get it. Here's what he wants you to understand here, is that, first of all, man's approval is a dead-end street, but trying to get God's approval, it will absolutely exhaust you and bring you to your knees. So where are you going to get it? Look at his story. Here's what he says. So he's doing all of these things. Quite frankly, from a Jewish perspective, he's doing all the right things, right? And then he said, I want you to listen to this testimony. But when he who set me apart before I was born, called me by his grace, and was pleased to reveal his son in me. Do you see the contrast between God in this section? Paul is seeking God's approval through works, but God is pleased to give him his approval through Christ. Do you see it? But look at where his testimony begins. When he who set me apart before I was even born. A couple of things there you need to think about. He was only born because God designed it that way. He didn't choose his birthday. But even before his birth, which Saul, who had become Paul, had absolutely no control over, God designed his birthday. He said, but even before I was born, even before my mom and dad came together and I was born, God set me apart for this moment and for this day. Does your testimony sound like that? I mean, just be honest. When you talk about your story, is it more about you pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and getting to the altar, or is it more about God bringing you face to face with his holiness and righteousness and his goodness that even before you were born it was designed? You know, in, like, I guess, Ephesians 1:6, Paul words it kind of like this. He says, we were chosen before the foundation of the world. It is overwhelming to think about your salvation from a biblical standpoint. When you tell your testimony, do you include that? I'm not saying that you need to. I'm just asking you some questions. When you share your grace story with another person, do you go all the way, before I was born, God designed it in such a way that I would be going this way, he would be coming this way, he would reveal himself to me, and he would make me his own. That's where he goes in his story. This makes some people uncomfortable. I mean, it's okay if it makes you uncomfortable. I'll be honest with you. It can make me uncomfortable too. God's sovereignty is uncomfortable because we want to be behind the wheel. We want to be holding the ball. We want to be determining our own destiny. And Paul tells you in his testimony, God designed this. He did not wake up that morning going, I really want to be converted to Christ. He woke up that morning going, how many Christians can I kill? And while he is going down one path, and y'all, by the way, think back on the stories of the scripture. Moses wasn't looking for God. When God showed up in the burning bush, he was pastoring Jethro, his father-in-law's, flocks when God showed up. Abraham, the son of an idol worshiper, was not looking for God when God showed up. We don't have any stories in the Bible of people figuring out for themselves. The stories in the Bible are God showing up by his grace and revealing. Peter and John and the disciples, they weren't looking for Jesus. Jesus was looking for them. They weren't calling him. He was calling them. Every story in the scriptures are very similar. David, as Jesse's trying to figure out which one, oh, there's this one other son. And Jesse, that must be the guy. David's not out there looking for Jesus. Jesus was looking for David. It's a beautiful thing about God is he pursues us. And he finds us. And he reveals himself to us. And he saves us. So Paul's wording is really, if you like, grace. Remember, he's trying to teach you grace here. He wants to know, he wants to say to the Galatians, y'all, even before you were born, before you were circumcised, any of these things that you're adding to, God came after you through his gospel. He revealed himself to you through his gospel. So he says, but when he who would set me apart before I was born called me by great works, he said he called me by his grace. Salvation is a work of grace. I think there's something in us that thinks that maybe God will notice us if we do things right or say things right. It makes me think of this verse in Deuteronomy whenever we're talking about the Israelites. And God says to the Israelites, the Lord did not set his affection on you and choose you because you were more numerous than other people. You were the fewest. He did it because he loved you. I mean, for any Jew in the Old Testament to have said, God came after us because we were wonderful, God says, no, you weren't. I just chose you. I came after you because I loved you. And if you read your Old Testament seriously, you'll see it on every page, that it's all by grace. The Israelites, God in His grace, sticks with them as they do everything they can to get away from Him. It doesn't end well for them at all. I mean, if you're just following the story and know the story, it makes sense why God turns to the Gentiles, because the Jewish people who God had brought to Himself had their middle fingers up at Him from Exodus all the way through, except for a few here and there, yet He persistently sticks with them and is faithful to them. Of course, it ends in turmoil and catastrophe and bondage, and I mean, it ends, there's nothing beautiful about it except for God's faithfulness. One of the saddest chapters in the Bible is somewhere in Ezekiel when the Spirit of God just wheels out of the temple. It's like, that's it. I'm done. Now they're coming in and worshiping, and the Spirit of God isn't even there anymore. He's just gone. That's why you talk about the 400 years of silence. Can you imagine up until John the Baptist's father being a priest or a high priest and going into the temple to worship, and there's no Holy Spirit there at all? God's just gone. And then Jesus shows up. You know, like, oh, thank God. Thank God. And now His Spirit comes and lives within us. And it all makes sense now. So He says, but then look at this next part. He says, He calls you by His grace. He set us apart before birth, called us by His grace. And it says, He was pleased. It brought God great pleasure to save you. I have trouble with understanding that God really is drawn to His children. You know, when I think of that great benediction in the book of Jude, to Him who is able to keep you from stumbling and to present you blameless before His glory, I get that part. I know that I'm going to be presented blameless before God's glory because of what Jesus did for me, and Christ has taken upon Himself all my sin. And when I stand before God, there's going to be no basis for judging me because Christ was judged in my place. But I understand that part. You know what part blows me away? He will present us before the Father with great joy. I understand that my sin has been atoned for. I have trouble sometimes realizing that God's going to be glad I'm there. I don't know about you, but I really do. I struggle with that. Like you, when I get to heaven, I think God's going to go, oh my God, I'm glad He's not down there anymore. I mean, it was a headache for decades. And now we finally got Him in here, and it's going to be all good. I have a hard time realizing that the Trinity is going to be going, welcome. I just think they're going to be going, oh, my gosh. You know, go get in Billy Graham's broom closet and don't come out. Right? I mean, that's how I feel it's going to be. This word for pleasure, God is pleased when He reveals Himself to us. I'll tell you, I'm not really trying to pick any fights with anybody in here, but it almost throws a curveball in. It looks to me, in Paul's story, not like, and again, please come back after I say this. I'll say nicer things in the future. It looks to me like Paul's not deciding to follow Jesus, but Jesus is deciding to save Paul in this story. Do you understand what I'm saying? There's no basis of Saul wanting anything to do with this. God's the one, the hound of heaven, is coming down and grabbing him, going, you're on my team now. It, like, when you understand this story, it almost guarantees our outcome, that God is going to bring His children to Himself. Because Saul didn't decide to follow Jesus. Jesus decided to convert him that day. True? I'm just reading his story. I'm not trying to get into your stuff. All right? And then here's the other part I want you to think about. Then we'll talk about it and get some responses. You know, sometimes people are like, you know, it would be great if this person hears the gospel, but be real careful now We don't want to chase them off. Have y'all ever heard that? I mean, listen, I've been about to preach before, and people said, hey, I got a friend here. Take it easy. It's like a Nacho Libre. Take it easy. You know, it's like one of those lines. Like, what? Had a friend this week tell me, the only reason I brought that up just now is a group in Columbia. He goes, years ago, he said, remember when you were doing that Bible study at the Episcopal Church? And I said, yeah. He goes, I brought a friend of mine, and he goes, Brad, man, you got on a roll. He goes, you just got on a roll. And he said, I got real uncomfortable. He said, you know what the problem was? I said, what? He goes, everything you were saying was true. He goes, and I was so uncomfortable that the person next to me was listening to things, he said, which I knew were absolutely true. And he goes, and I was scared to death. He said, I got in the car with him. And he goes, I just said, so what did you think? And he goes, and I thought the guy was going to say, that is the biggest idiot I've ever met in my life. He said, you know what the guy said to me? He goes, that's the best news I've ever heard. Because it was the gospel. And he goes, and I was soaking, and God ended up saving this guy. I didn't even know this. And he said, what convicted me so much was how uncomfortable I was that he would hear it. Here's why I bring it up. When Saul, who had become Paul, was converted, God told him two things that you would think would have chased him off. Number one, he said, I'm going to show you how much you must suffer. And number two, I'm going to send you to the Gentiles. Can you imagine being the Jew of Jews and being told by Jesus, by the way, you're now with me and I'm sending you to the Gentiles? If you could chase another person off with truth, Saul would have run for his life. You know what the problem was? God had set him apart before he was born. This was God's day to bring him home. Changes the way that I pray for lost people. Father, bring them to yourself. Bring them to yourself. You read enough about Saul, you should be going, if you can save this guy, you can save anybody. And then you go look in the mirror. God, if you can save me, you can save anybody. I love this story. This story, again, has really challenged me because I've thought, I've got to integrate this terminology into my testimony. I can't ignore this in my testimony. It can't be about, you know, just doing my thing, and I'm all of a sudden, when we make it about us, we make it about our story. So anyway, what do we have? Thinking about these things, I want us to each week walk down this Luther road.